The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
New research from the World Health Organization suggests that one in three adults out there are at risk of disease. Why? Because of lack of exercise. A third of us not even doing the bare minimum that is required each and every week. With me to discuss, Andy Dunn, physiotherapist and founder of Personal Health Medical Exercise Clinic, and Dr. Harriet Tracy, the founder of Beyond BMI, a medically led obesity management pathway. You're both very welcome. Thanks a million for joining us. Andrew, are you surprised? People are lazy. A third of people. Is that our takeaway?
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Exercise is a relatively new phenomenon in the last 100-odd years, and it's weird by nature, whereas physical activity was always part of our lives up until about 100 years ago. So the notion of going into a dark, lit gym in spandex, running on a treadmill.
God, you make it sound so appealing.
It's not for everyone. I can tell you from my clinical work in the last kind of 10, 15 years, approximately half the people I meet hate the idea of gyms and exercise. So I'm not surprised.
Do you suspect that a lot of those people, that third of people who are not doing it, that if you were to quiz them, that they probably suspect they are getting exercise? You know, people, I'm always amazed at how kind of deluded people can be about their physical health.
Well, no, I think there's a lot of people who are in the lower end are quite aware of it, but actually a lot of them avoid it through fear. I mean, a lot of people are absolutely petrified of the idea of doing it.
What are they worried about when they talk to you?
Adverse events, maybe if I do something, I'll hurt myself. Or potentially if I have a medical issue, that it's not suitable or appropriate for them. I'm yet to find a medical issue where exercise is not appropriate. But yeah, I think fear and avoidance is a big one. I think most people are tuned in to where they're at approximately, but it's that initiation, it's that getting over the hump and the behaviour change. That's one of the key things that we need to look at.
And when you meet people and this is what they say, well, what's the response? Like, how do you get them to confront their fear?
Well, we try, I mean, I'm not a psychologist, I'm a physiotherapist, but there's an amateur level of psychology in all healthcare interactions. It's tapping into the person's needs or barriers. And if you talk about the barriers with them, and, you know, this World Health Organization brief that's dropped on us all now, like, what they don't tell you is if you get out of the lowest common denominator, if you're not low-level fit, if you become average, you reduce your risk of all-cause mortality by about 30 to 40%. So there's a huge amount of hope, because it doesn't take a lot to go from low-level to bang average. You don't have to be a triathlete. You just need to get out of the lowest 20%. Mm. And if you do that, reducing your risk of all-cause mortality is, you know, generally lands with people. You know?
Are there certain activities that people have more trepidation over than others? Like going to the gym, as you say, in the spandex?
Yes, I think it's probably environmental, you know, if they don't want to go into those gym settings. But in terms of a mode of exercise people are most afraid of, it's without doubt to me is strength training, which is probably the most impactful. People are very fearful of overdoing it, of hurting themselves. They might have maybe some unhelpful beliefs around their spinal stability or anything. You know, there's a lot that can come into that transaction in people's
minds. It's probably the most new for them as well, though, isn't it? They might not have exercised in years, but as a kid, they would have ran and cycled and swam and things like that. They might not have stood in front of a full-length mirror and done bicep curls.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like I mentioned at the outset, people 100 years ago had labour-intensive jobs. And so the idea and notion of going into a gym or studio to exercise was so ridiculous at the end of a workday that never happened. Now people are sedentary, so they need to find a way to counteract that. But yeah, when we were younger, the idea of running, moving, climbing, throwing, swimming, you know, it's not something you tend to do at 45 years old.
So. Oh yeah, well I'm sure if you could go back 100 years and meet some average Irish farmer and tell him or her that you were getting up at 5 in the morning to go out and run 15k, they think you needed your head examined.
Absolutely.
I mentioned Harriet Tracy is with us as well. Harriet, I mean, are we wrong to be talking about this only in the context of physical health? Should we be looking at it in terms of other areas as well?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because we often look at people who are maybe sedentary or not exercising enough, and we make the false assumption that they're just lazy, they don't want to. But often there are very real medical conditions that are in place that often create not just mental barriers but physical barriers. And one of them, as you know, is obesity. So, you know, beyond BMI, we would have a lot of people who are living with complications as a result of weight, one of which is functional and mechanical complications, things like knee pain, back pain, sleep apnea. And all of these conditions ultimately make it more challenging to exercise and more difficult. And some of those are not addressed very well, I would say, by us as doctors. Sometimes we tell people kind of useless information, like you just need to move more. And just echoing what Andrew has said, it's about really looking at what are the barriers here. Now, some of those barriers are medical, in which case, if it's obesity, we should treat the obesity. Some of those are mental, in which case we should discuss with people what are those barriers. And that's why, for example, in Beyond BMI, we do use health coaches, because we recognize there are very real barriers. So, you know, I would say it's about looking at the holistic nature of people, not just assuming that people are inactive because they're lazy. I think that's a very dangerous assumption.
I assume there's a window, though, or a kind of a group of people who fall into that category of being overweight or obese, but they're not so overweight or obese that they need kind of a medicinal intervention, whereby the intervention is exercise. Do you know what I mean? So like the barrier to exercise, you say overcoming it, is actually exercise.
Well, I mean, you know, you mentioned then not all people have a barrier to exercise, but I suppose the way we would look at it is that people who are living with obesity and maybe are looking to use exercise to lose weight, for example, it's been falsely told to people that exercise is the most effective way to lose weight. But that's not the case. And I know, Andrew, you can speak to this, but weight essentially is a very, very challenging issue. And it's something that exercise is a very important part of weight maintenance, but maybe not so much weight loss. So I think we really have to think a lot about why are we exercising? And we're not exercising to lose weight. We're exercising to gain health.
And the weight loss thing, is that that's brings in the diet. Is that what you're talking about?
Multifactorial. It brings in diet, it brings in biological causes, genetic causes. There's so many different elements, and really, if you want to address weight, you're going to have to look at all of them.
Yeah, you can't outrun a bad diet.
But one of the most interesting stats around health gain is a term that Harriet's just used. There are thousands of people who are obese and high level fit, have a longer life expectancy and a higher quality of life than people who are not obese and are low level fit. So like there's, you know, we can't paint everyone with the same brush.
Yeah.
There's lots of skinny people walking around who are unhealthy, and there are lots of
just
people
just naturally
who are
very skinny but live a really unhealthy life.
Absolutely.
And their body's unhealthy as a result.
Similarly, right, there's thousands who are overweight who are high level fit. I mean, I spoke about those. There are three categories and it's not complex. You want to get out of the lowest 20th percentile. So if you've got 9 or 10 friends, same sex and age as you, have a look around and say, I'm in the lowest 20%. If I can get into the middle ground,
yeah,
I'm changing my risk factors and my quality of life factors longer term, my longevity, my likelihood of getting any kind of chronic disease or any adverse events.
So does one influence the other, though, when we talk about diet and exercise, in the sense that I know what you're saying, you don't exercise to lose weight, you exercise to get fit and to stay fit. But at the same time, if you're exercising, it's kind of like an added incentive not to be eating all of the rubbish, because you can see your kind of body getting fitter and getting stronger and you want it to respond the right way. And it's, you know, you're maybe less inclined then to eat the things you shouldn't be eating. Does that
make
sense?
It's a really interesting point. I think sometimes what we find is that when people exercise, particularly,
I put it this way, I eat more rubbish if I'm injured. I just feel rubbish.
Yeah.
And I eat more crap, and then you feel like crap, and then the injury clears up. And actually, just by virtue of actually being able to get back out and do things again, I kind of just, without even having to think about it, start to eat a bit more healthy.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, exercise definitely impacts appetite. So we know that when we exercise, that we're improving insulin sensitivity. We're making our tissues more sensitive to that signaling and allowing glucose to be removed from our blood, allowing us to be more healthy, and it can moderate appetite. But on the other side of it, we know that when we put people into calorie deficits, which happen when we exercise, that that can actually drive counter-regulatory things in our body. For example, our body responds by increasing our hunger hormones. Mm. They make us feel more hungry. You know, if you've ever been put on a diet where you're restricting your calories by 400, 500 calories a day, you start to feel bloody hungry after a while.
Well, the version of that is the marathon runners who don't lose weight. People think they're going to shed loads of weight, and they do at the start, and then they plateau because they're just so hungry that they just horse through food after every run. One of the great joys, I have to say, though, of running the marathon is you can eat kind of whatever you feel like. Can I ask, though, about people who are time poor? Because there's lots of texts coming in along those lines. You know, people talking about how busy they are. They've got kids. They've got busy jobs. They don't have the hours in the day. And even though, and I'm kind of summarising quite a few of them into one here, but there's a common theme to them. They kind of feel that despite the fact that there's not huge movement in the day, they're exhausted by the end of the day.
Well, I think there's a way that you can personalise an exercise programme for anyone. And you can also get an optimal amount of exercise for anyone. And the general rule is the optimal amount of exercise for anybody is about 6-7% of the waking hours in their week. So I just don't buy into time constraints. I get that people are busy. We see it all the time in a clinical presentation. We get the idea they have kids. But it comes down to priorities as well. And it comes down to how you can fit the time in. Doesn't have to be in the gym. Most conditions of employment have become agile and flexible in modern day Ireland, particularly after COVID. So the time constraints issue is real, and it makes it challenging, but it's not insurmountable.
Harriet?
Yeah, I think I would echo Andrew there. I mean, he spoke earlier about the difference between exercise and physical activity. I think if you look at exercise movement, let's say through the lens of pure exercise, you might think, I can't fit in an hour a day. If you look through the lens of physical activity, can I be more physically active? Can I get off one stop earlier on the bus? You know, can I, you see sometimes Instagram videos of people using their children as almost weights to do lifting. Like that's it, for all intents and purposes, resistance training or strength and conditioning training. So I think it's about being creative maybe, and just how can you bring more movement into your day-to-day life and make it joyful? Because that's a big barrier we see in Beyond BMI is people have this negative feeling towards exercise. It's just another bloody thing on your to-do list.
Yes.
And we're all so busy. So how about we make it a bit more joyful and we start to find enjoyment in it?
How important is that, Andy, as well, that it's framed positively?
I think it's possibly the number one big factor. You know, you can look again at how you break down what exercise is. There are four parts: the strength, cardio, respiratory function, mobility or flexibility, and then neuromotor. That's the boring clinical stuff. But included in any of that could be dancing. Including in that could be a jog. It could be, you know, playing football, it could be playing paddle tennis, it could be anything. It does not have to be in spandex. It does not have to be in a darkly lit gym. But it does have to float your boat. It has to make you smile. That's what's going to make it consistent.
And if going into a darkly lit gym in spandex is what floats your boat, we're not judging you either.
No,
Andy,
we're not.
It's a little bit. Listen, great job. Andy Dunn is a physiotherapist and the founder of Personal Health Medical Exercise Clinic. Dr. Harriet Tracy, the founder of Beyond BMI, a medically led obesity management pathway. Harriet and Andy, thank you.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.